Today is March 19th, 2008. We are at the Atlantic Coast Bank in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. Today we are interviewing Benjamin Wieroski. Mr. Wieroski was born on October 6, 1918 in Brooklyn, New York. My name is Don Hill, and I will interview Mr. Wieroski on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Also attending the interview session today is Mary Wieroski, Mr. Wieroski's wife and perhaps better half, and assisting me is Mr. Gerhard Tam, who is operating the equipment today. I will now begin the interview. From Mr. Wieroski, looking at your biographical sheet, I noticed that you entered the service in 1944, well after World War II started, and you were just a bit older. You were 25 or 26 years old than the normal draftee, but nevertheless, you were drafted. Perhaps you could start telling us your story by letting us know what you were doing in that time that you were drafted and what happened after that.
Well, when I was drafted, we were living in Brooklyn, New York, at 36th Street. My wife's parents lived across the street. My parents lived on the other side of the street. I guess that's how we met, before that. But in Brooklyn, they used to have a big flag hanging in the middle of the street for the war that people used to throw money into. And they used to take that out to use it for whatever. And my family, there was two brothers and myself in the war. So my mother had a three-star flag in the car, in the window. And that's it. They sent me, I got notice, had to go to New York, wherever the place was, I don't remember. And I came back, I was drafted. My big 6-foot neighbor next door to me was rejected. So anyway, I was drafted and we were sent to Camp Upton, Long Island. That's all the way out on the island where my two brothers had left previously. And I was there doing odd jobs that the Army had for you, because we were just marking time, I guess. And I guess I was sent to Fort Belvoir. That's in below Washington. And from there, I was doing all the odd jobs again that, I think you both know, all the jobs that they had for you while we were waiting to do whatever. And for some reason, after I had...
We've been joined in the interview room by Mrs. Carolyn Strunk and Mr. Brian Strunk, the daughter and son-in-law of Mr. Wieroski, and we welcome you to the interview room. Thank you. Ski, before we go beyond Fort Belvoir, please, why were you not drafted until you were nearly 25 years old? And were your brothers older or younger than you?
My two brothers were older than me.
And they went off like early in the war, perhaps?
Well, my one brother, Siegfried, he was drafted right away. He served his time in the draft for 1 year. Then about 2 or 3 days later, the war started. And the poor guy had to go back in. And he was in Europe for 4 to 5 years. And the guy with the little car overseeing, what's what, finding, like a scout.
Uh-huh.
And how he made it is beyond me. And my other brother was drafted, which he shouldn't have been because he was rejected. And how he got in the Army is beyond me. And he was picking up the wounded while they were fighting in the medical.
That's tough.
And that's it. Yeah. My whole family is gone. Mm. But I have a father that was in the Russian Army, where they picked him up by the scruff of the neck and said, okay. Even though he was Polish, he was in the Russian Army. And that's the family.
Okay, so you went to your basic training out on Long Island.
No, in Fort Belvoir.
Oh, you were down to Fort Belvoir.
Yes.
So did you get any additional training at Fort Belvoir before you shipped out, too?
Well, for some reason, it was more or less fortunate for me, I guess, I was put into a map reproduction school. And that was the whole thing that I was doing, not doing, but selling supplies for the lithographic trade. And unfortunately, my platoon was shipped to the Bulge. They both died.
Right there, okay. Okay, you're in Fort Belvoir, and you're going to training.
Well,
after
I was
your basic
waiting
training
to be shipped overseas.
Right.
And if you want to hear another story, we went to Fredericksburg for training. You know, what we did every so often, and it was snow, cold, and my buddy and I were sleeping in the pup tent, and when I woke up in the morning, what do you think was sleeping with us? A snake.
Oh, God.
You never saw so
in the snow.
Someone get up and run. And that was it. But we waited there in Fort Belvoir, and then I was shipped to California. Going with the new trains, you know, they had then. And it took us, I forget how many days. And we waited there to go overseas. I think I was stationed at Marysville, wherever that is now, I don't remember. And
this would have been about when? About mid-1944 or?
No, it was in, like, toward the end. I really don't remember,
okay.
But it's in my records, I think.
Sure.
And we were waiting. While we were waiting there, my buddy and I were took in California, San Francisco. And while we were at a bar having a beer, there was a young lady there waiting for her husband, who was a captain of a Liberty ship. She was waiting for him. And we had a good time. The captain took us around California, everywhere, Chinatown, everywhere. And that was it. Then we left. We were leaving. We were put on this new ship, the Army ship, the SS Hersey. He was a general in the Army. I never knew who he was, but it was a fast ship that we didn't have to go with anybody else. We could outrun any submarine, which, okay, I laugh every time I say that.
They told you that, and you had to believe it, right?
And we had submarine duty 3 or 4 times every day. And it got so that instead of going all the way downstairs to several decks down, we slept on the deck for about 30 days. But unfortunately, fortunately, this new boat, the turbine, something happened, and we had to pull into Pearl Harbor. And we spent time there. How much time, I don't remember, because it's a long time.
At this point, you were destined for the Philippines? That was your destination?
Yes.
And were you part of a unit at that point, or were you still traveling
as an individual? How big of a company? We were called something else once in a while.
But at this point, you had an organization that you belonged to.
Yes.
With a CO and an XO and a platoon leader and those things.
Yes, a captain. Captains, I forget his name, but he's in the pictures here. And we finally hit a lady, and we were sleeping in tents, naturally. And we were there waiting for the war, for us to go into Japan, which wasn't too long.
So this would have moved into 1945 at this point? You would have gone through early 45, maybe?
No. I think about the middle.
The war was over in August.
Well,
or thereabouts, of 45.
I was there when all of a sudden we got the news that they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. I think I may have a couple of pictures in there, but we had a whole load of them, and photographs that I didn't take, but whatever happened to them, I don't know. All I know, I had them when I had to make the copies.
How did you fill your days while you were waiting? What was a typical day like? Do you recall that?
It was just waiting, marking time to go to war with Japan.
Getting three squares a day, exercising.
If you want to call them squares, yes. But it was unfortunately, a lot of the people there were hungry, and we used to try to save food for
them. The local population.
And probably a few Japanese people, because they looked, to me, they looked alike at the time. But who knew at the time, who Japan looked like and all that. But when they dropped the bomb, everybody cheered. And that's one thing that I am very incensed about people today saying that it was inhuman for us to do that. Now, I think President Truman made the wisest choice, because there would have been a million people killed, whereas in Hiroshima, unfortunately, there were civilians killed, but they also had plants there, manufacturing, military.
Okay. Now, you're in the Philippines, and there must have been a plan for the invasion and that you all were training for or preparing for.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yes, we had our equipment, our printing lithographic equipment, and it was going to be put back into an LST, the one with the front open. Well, the plan was that we were going to steam. Yeah, we were going to steam into Tokyo Bay with this LST that had a 35-millimeter machine gun, shoot at anything, and turn around and try to sail out at 5 knots an hour.
All of 5 knots.
And that would have been the history of me.
But that didn't happen. Here you are.
When we heard that Truman okayed to drop the bomb, that was it.
Did you suspect after that that there'd be no journey to Japan at all, or was it still clear that you were going to Japan?
No. I don't know. You know the Army. They're playing. They're going to fix up everything and, you know, get everything straightened back into shape again. So, meanwhile, I was on duty unloading the barges that were bringing food, beer, wine, you name it. And I was waiting to go to Japan. But meanwhile, it was in 120 degrees, and then get caught in a cold rain that the captain wouldn't let us quit, I caught pneumonia. And that's where my Polish doctor comes in. I didn't want to stay in Leyte with a new crew again, you know, new friends, new buddies. So this Polish doctor gave me penicillin. I think it was an experiment at the time. And I said, I don't want to stay here. I want to go to Japan. She said, don't worry. I'll get you out of here so you'll be.
So while you were ill, your team left?
No. They haven't left yet. She got me out of the hospital before my outfit was leaving.
So you could go back and join them.
So I go back and then be shipped to Japan. And we were shipped to Sapporo, which is north, I think, Hokkaido. And we stayed there, waiting. And the only thing, I remember a Japanese little boy. We weren't supposed to eat fruit because Japan, you know, grew things. But he came to me with a big tomato and gave it to me. I took it, and we weren't supposed to eat them. So I said, ah, the heck with it. I ate it. My buddy and I, we ate half and half. But this little boy was beautiful. And we waited in Sapporo, and then we were shipped to Yokohama in the LST with our equipment. And meanwhile, we're going in between somewhere when a typhoon came up, and we were on the water. And this poor sailor, being at the, we had their bunks, they had hammocks. One fellow was thrown out of his hammock. That's how rough it was. And we hit Yokohama. And our job was to be there, straighten out. Meanwhile, we had to build our quarters. We had to build Quonset huts, because there was nothing there. We would have been sleeping in tents again, I guess. And we were in Yokohama, and naturally, guard duty and all that was the usual thing, because we had a lot of equipment, boxes and everything. And that's another story which stays with me.
Okay, you're in Yokohama, you're building your Quonset huts, you've had the tomato from the young Japanese.
Well, that was up north.
Well, up in Sapporo. What happened next, please?
Well,
carry on, if you would.
I was on guard duty, and naturally, nothing is supposed to move.
Right.
And you know what happens then. So, meanwhile, I hear this rattling in one of the boxes. And finally, I got up the nerve to go up there and see what. And it was this boy. He was living there all the time. And before that, he was living wherever. Of course, his parents were killed, you know, when we dropped the bombs on Yokohama and Tokyo and all that. And Yokohama and Tokyo, there was one road that led, you know, right into Tokyo. And the houses, the paper houses that they had, were completely destroyed. So whatever happened to the people, they just went wherever. And that was my thing for the rest of the war, I guess. After we had our quarters, we went around in the ship or the LST around the island. You know, the islands where the people themselves used to come out in canoes and those gadgets. And that was the time of my life after.
Was the talk among your fellow troopers, you know, when you're drinking a beer or relaxing off duty, was when do I get to go home or what's the plan?
No, we knew
you didn't
nothing.
Talk about that at all?
No, we knew nothing. We were just waiting. Then we waited and waited, and finally, whatever ship I got on, I don't remember. And we moved into Seattle, Washington.
Another 30-day trip across the ocean, or was that a
yeah,
little bit shorter?
We passed the time zone again.
Sure.
And I had a certificate somewhere on that, but I don't know what happened to it. And that was a long trip, too. Not as long as the first one. But then from Seattle, we came back on the deluxe coach train, and I don't remember how long it took us back to Fort Dix.
And that was your discharge point at Fort Dix?
That was the discharge point. It's all in my record here.
Mm-hmm.
And then from Fort Dix, I had to find my way home with a ferry and whatever, and then Independent subway back to Brooklyn.
So you arrived home in the subway. Nice. Well done.
I came home on the subway, yes.
Good for you.
But I skipped where, when I was in Belvoir, that I used to come home once in a while. Leave Washington. They used to let us go at 12 o'clock. And I used to get the train to New York, come home, stay overnight, then leave early, so I would get back to Fort Belvoir. They used to have deluxe luxury truck cars that you paid a dollar for to take you from Washington to Fort Belvoir. And let's see.
How about memorable characters? I know the young man with the tomato has certainly stuck in your mind.
Yes. Oh, but the young man with that I found in the boxes.
Yes.
We had the Japanese make them a uniform of like our uniform, and then he would be there to clean up our barrack.
So the unit sort of adopted him.
Yes.
Very nice.
Because he had nowhere, and where they would have taken him, we didn't know, so we kept him there.
So he was certainly
a very nice boy.
A memorable character.
I have a picture of him. And it was something. But I got to give Truman a hand, because if he didn't okay it, I used to guard in Japan caves going miles into the mountain full of whatever. And not only me, but other guys in my platoon.
Full of supplies, you mean? And
full of supplies, equipment, guns, you name it. And it would have been horrible. It would have been horrible if they didn't drop the bomb. Of course, the Army, if you didn't want to join or do anything, you went to jail. But the warlords in Japan, they didn't question. They just cut your head off. And that's why the Japanese fought. I guess a lot of them didn't want to, but they had to. But that's just my, opinion.
How did your service life impact the rest of your life?
Well, I was drafted with a wife and a child, which my company, I want to thank them, and I wish companies and people would be like they were then. When I went to the Army, my company said, "We want you back here, so we're going to pay your rent for the 2 years," which they did. And that's naturally was a saving for my wife. Plus, when I was home on leave one time, she told me to put the fireplace on. And you know what happened.
No, we don't. Tell us, please.
That's when our son was born.
Uh-huh.
My son Richie was born, which, we were almost on the way home when he was born. Everything was
1946.
But I couldn't get any help from Salvation Army, from anyone there, from my company, anything. My Army company. So I had to wait my turn. And that was it. So you can say it was like a vacation, in a way. Not a good vacation, but...
But mostly positive, pleasant recollections.
Yes, I met a lot of people. In fact, it reminds me, people that lived where we lived in Brooklyn, anybody of mine that was going home before me, he used to get a spaghetti dinner if he visited my wife, right?
Oh, he used to send them home to me.
Right.
My buddy's coming home to make him a nice spaghetti dinner.
I met people in business, in the photographic business in Pennsylvania, and I met a professor that I palled out with. He was a learner. He was going to be, or whatever. And met a lot of nice people, and you met some that you wouldn't associate with. But that's the way.
So jumping forward a little bit, how is Nassau County so honored to have you living here?
Well, Nassau County, we never knew about it until 1954, and we didn't know about it then. We used to come down to Florida at least once a year to visit our sister in St. Pete. And we used to pass Fernandina Beach on 17. And unfortunately, I don't think they changed 17 since 1954.
Still there, right.
You know, with a lot of places, they maybe made the road that much wider.
Sure.
But it's nice here.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we did come here.
We're asking the question about how the Wyrowskis arrived in Nassau County, and Carolyn is going to help us, along with Mary, to respond to that question.
When my parents moved to St. Petersburg, Florida, in 1986, I believe, and we used to go down to visit with them, and as my mom said, as they got older, it was difficult to have a cat and a dog and two children and my brother and my husband for holidays. So what we would do is go to Disney World for Christmas. And it became so crowded and uncomfortable that one year we decided we need to find someplace else to be at Christmas time. So I started with the A's in Florida, and I found Amelia Island. It sounded very intriguing. We came to visit one year, but ended up staying just one day because my mom had emergency surgery. So we went to St. Petersburg. We came before them. We went to St. Petersburg to be with her. And the next year, we came back. And we came back. Well, that next year, we ended up going home with a piece of property.
What year would that have been, Carolyn?
1997. However, we didn't move here until 2003. But we came to visit every year.
Well, we are glad that you're here. It's wonderful.
We are glad to be here.
Yes.
We love it.
How about Mr. Wyrowski? Any other thoughts that enter your mind at this point that you'd like to share with the nation?
Well, we're here to stay, our last move. And we live in Fernandina Beach, Yulee. It's a little mixed up, but we're Fernandina Beach. And if you're Lofton, where Lofton Point, where that's where they just built the new complex there, Home Depot and all those. So we're just a half mile away, right off Amelia Island, A1A.
Right, sir.
And that's it.
Well, we thank you for sharing your recollections with us. Mr. Wyrowski, thank you for serving your country so honorably, and we are very pleased that you volunteered to be a part of this important program.
Well, I think the nation should know everything that's going on, how good, bad, or whatever, and maybe we'll have a better place to live.
Thank you for your interview, sir. This concludes the interview with Mr. Benjamin Wyrowski.